Let me start with these words from a great man. I won't say who it was. You see, there are two flames burning in the human heart all the time. The flame of anger against injustice and the flame of hope that you can build a better world. At this moment in time, we see extremism growing all around the world, and we see election results which confuse us and scare us, let's be honest. For us at Amos, we turn back to some words from Martin Luther King. Amos's inspiration largely was from Martin Luther King. Garth Hewitt, who set up Amos Trust 31 years ago now, he went and heard Martin Luther King speak at St. Paul's Cathedral when he was over here in the UK. In fact, there's a radio program about it last week, because I think Garth is one of the very few surviving members of the audience from that time. And his words and so much of what he stood for inspired him and inspires us today. In 63, in 1963, he was arrested in Alabama and he was put in prison, and he wrote a letter to the church leaders in the South and throughout America. And in this, he wrote these words: "We have a choice. Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? Jesus Christ was an extremist for love, truth, and goodness, and thereby rose above his environment. Perhaps the South, the nation, and the world are in dire need of creative extremists." At this moment in time, I have absolutely no doubt that what the world needs is people who are prepared to be extremists for love, for justice, for hope, for gentleness, for goodness, for faithfulness, for mercy. The passage from Isaiah describes what it is God longs for. When it was written, who knows when it was written, but basically it's widely seen as being written for the people returning from exile, for the Jews when they came back from the original exile. And there they came back expecting this land of milk and honey, expecting all the things which they had heard promised to them to be realized. And what they found was that Jerusalem was still full of foreign idols, was governed by a military regime, that they themselves were bonded laborers on the land, that their children were not able to grow up in freedom, that they weren't able to build homes and live in them themselves, they weren't able to grow their crops and enjoy the fruit of that, but somebody else would take it, and old people weren't able to grow up in dignity. That's that wonderful reading. Those who grow to be 100 will be seem accursed because they're so young, which I think is kind of scary thought, to be perfectly honest. I don't think my body's going to last that long. But this vision of the new heaven and the new earth, where the lion lays down with the lamb, where there's peace and justice, and people can flourish. And the great joy of Amos is that we work with people around the world who do that in situations where it shouldn't be able to occur, who do it with people who we forget and we choose to forget. And our invitation is to come and join us in that, to be a part with us in that. And I'll say a little bit more about that. I want to start off by saying a bit about some of our partners in Gaza. The situation in Gaza is awful. There's no other words of describing it. It's coming up to the 10th year of the blockade or siege of Gaza, which has meant that only minimal food and building materials are allowed in. In that 10 years, there's been three major conflicts, which are very one-sided conflicts. And thousands of women and children have died. Thousands more carry permanent disabilities because of it. Our partners there seek to do two things. We have two partners there. The first is a youth training program, which says that 60% unemployment for young people, that must not cripple them and it mustn't lead them to further despair and to acts of retaliation. So it trains them and it works with them to give them the skills so they can utilize those, whether those be in electrical work, whether those be secretarial skills, whether those be carpentry and metalwork. And when I visited earlier this year, I met a girl there and we were expecting her to say, "Life's awful in Gaza." And she said, "I love Gaza. It's wonderful." We all looked really surprised. Said, "I love Gaza because my family is here. Because people love and care for me here. All we want is freedom and a chance. We just want a chance." So we work with them. We also work with a fantastic hospital then, which is doing psychosocial support for children. particularly those who've been through the war and the trauma they experienced. For some of them, they've had their homes destroyed 3 times. 35,000 people are still homeless there, 2 years after conflict, where millions of pounds was promised and so little of it has ever been delivered in aid. So they do psychosocial support, they do physiotherapy. They also do a load of health programs and nutritious programs because 80% of Gaza rely on food aid. 30% of children in Gaza are anemic and often acute anemia, which means rickets. And something like 15% have severe malnutrition. So they do that work. They also do a fantastic program on breast cancer screening. The incidence of cancer in Gaza has been shooting up. No one's quite sure why, because research teams aren't allowed in. But it may well be because irradiated shells were used in the conflicts and they had to rebuild homes using the materials from those. So in effect, the building materials cause cancer. But as those rates have increased, what happens is if you're a woman in Gaza now, the life expectancy of the UK, if you were diagnosed with breast cancer, is 3 times the rate it is in Gaza. And yet full medical facilities are 30 miles away. If you're a woman in Gaza, you can have chemotherapy. You won't be able to complete a course because the supplies are in short supply and there's no radiotherapy. So what happens is that once you're diagnosed, you have a double mastectomy immediately because that's the only treatment they can do. And they will hopefully get you to go overseas for some radiotherapy or go over to the West Bank for radiotherapy. But permission may well be denied. Completely avoidable medical procedures, which we would never do here, but are done because of political aims. And our partner says, we are committed to a new heaven and a new earth, where this is not how people are treated, where people can live with respect and dignity. Our partners in Nicaragua, who came and visited you recently, Joel, who's just the most wonderful, fantastic partner to work with, there they talk about this wonderful story about an elephant and a chicken, a mother elephant and mother chicken, who are best friends. They do everything together. It's quite a lovely picture, isn't it? Every day they go walking together through the woods and the forests, and they talk and they chat. And then one day, mother chicken sits down and refuses to get up. And mother elephant gets really worried about mother chicken. What's going on here? And each day she says, come and play, come and play, come and do things with us. But mother chicken stays there. And after a few days, she says, I've got to stay here and look after my eggs. So mother elephant goes away and thinks about this and comes back the next day and says, as you can't get up from your eggs and come and play, let me sit on your eggs for you. And very gently lifts mother chicken off and sits on her eggs for her. And obviously destroys them. And they say most development work in poor communities around the world is just like the elephant. It really wants to help, but it never listens to the community it wants to help in. And their whole work is built about listening with the community, together with the communities, developing simple responses. As you've heard from Joel, where they're working hasn't had any rain for 3 years because of climate change or minimal rain. So they're developing simple responses with them, ways of harvesting the little water they do have, different crops, empowering local leaders so they can stand up and they can challenge government policies, working with young people. Simple stuff which they can keep doing afterwards, because after 5 years, they will withdraw their work. Deliberately, so there's not dependency. But it's all based on simple things, listening to people. Or our street child partners. We have partners in South Africa, in Burundi, in Chennai, in India, and also in Tanzania. And their work with children on the streets, children who are forgotten, neglected, children who have no identity. If you have no identity, you have no legal rights. So children who don't technically exist, their work is absolutely inspirational. For all of them, it's about going out, meeting the children, building their confidence, getting to know them, developing psychosocial care, using sports programs, using all those things, to either reintegrate them back into homes or to give them with a future. But for none of them, it's enough to say that's it. For all of them, they say we believe in human flourishing. We believe these children must be able to flourish. And our partners in Burundi are absolutely staggering. Their whole philosophy is based on the least shall be first. They really believe in that verse in the Bible. Because Judone, who set it up, in the genocide which happened in 94, he himself was on the streets. And he realized in the streets that the ethnic divide between Tutsi and Hutu wasn't present. The children just saw each other as children. And so he realized that actually there was a hope here for something different. And their whole belief is that it's the children from the streets, as they've grown up and as they've been educated, as they've learned about themselves, hold a real hope for the future of Burundi as the next generation of leaders, who are not just the tribal warlords who've destroyed the country, not rooted in ethnic divides, not rooted in corruption, but actually saying, here is hope for the country. And seeing their work is inspirational. Seeing our work in Chennai, there, well, what you witness there is incredible programs of children, children who come to Chennai on the railways and run away from homes, who can be thousands of miles away from home. And the workers, they go out and they sleep on the platforms to meet the trains because they know that people will try to get them into a whole load of, will try to traffic them or get them into local labors unless they meet them off the trains and offer them a chance into something else. And when children say no, they go back the next day and they let the children decide for themselves. And when you see their work empowering those children, working with communities, communities who've been on the streets for decades. I met one woman who had been sleeping under a pipe for 67 years on the pavement. No home, nothing like that at all. Every day anything she has to be put away. In the monsoon, everything she has will be destroyed. 67 years. And their response for them was not to say you have to go to his home miles away, to say, let's get your rights realized today. All our partners are committed to a new heaven and a new earth where there's peace and justice, where literally the lion lies down with the lamb. And for us, the response which we believe is twofold. One, it's about a creative response. We see this huge creativity there. And we look at how we can respond. We're deliberately a very small organization. I say deliberately. I'm not sure entirely how deliberate it is, but deliberately a very small organization so we can be creative, so we can respond in the ways we see fit. This book is the latest thing we've produced called Words of Hope. I'll read a couple of things from there in a bit. This year we've got loads of candles, which I think we've just sold out of, which means that you can take a candle, they're all from Bethlehem, and there's packs of 25 to light each day for Advent, to say a prayer for those places in the world which we don't know what to pray for. So places like Syria, we just don't know what to pray, but we just want to light a candle for it. And those are available on the website. There's Christmas cards, there's loads of other things. And there's a carol service, which you hopefully got an invite as you came in for. That's a wonderful celebration. We've got our partner from Burundi, another one from Palestine, and an MP talking, so I'm not quite sure we'll get anything else done in the whole evening. But they're all being interviewed, and then fantastic music from a great range of musicians who are involved with us. But we also got, that'll possibly be our most stupid thing, is we're going to be walking next year from London to Jerusalem. You're very welcome to join us for as much of it, as little as you want to. It's called Just Walk to Jerusalem because it marks the 100th anniversary of when Britain gave the land of Palestine to be the future state of Israel. It also marks 50 years of occupation of the West Bank and 10 years of the siege of Gaza. And we're saying just walk if you believe there should be full equal rights for everybody who calls the Holy Land home. Just walk. Just do the most simple response to it. So we do a whole load of things like that. And we rely on people like you getting involved. Because we genuinely believe it's the simple, small steps which we take which transform situations. The big headlines, those things which dazzle us, are not where answers are. I'm going to finish with a couple of readings from here. The first one is actually a Christmas reading, but captures a lot of what this hope is all about. It's called Never Understand. Let me get some glasses on. And it tries to show a little bit about what hope really is. Never Understand. The hopes of a political resolution are once more smouldering and growing cold. The promises of aid to rebuild the ashes of Gaza have proved as worthless as the sands on the shore at beach camp. Independent reports and calls for international justice have once again been denounced as politically inexpedient. New Year's celebrations will be overshadowed by the commemoration of so many deaths. The Christmas story reminds us that the promises of politicians and the latest round of peace talks are not where hope is found. These are the flashlights which dazzle us, not the slow burn that glows in the darkest places, the slow realization that lies will become transparent, that violence will not lead to peace, that human dignity always exerts itself, that beauty appears amidst the wreckage, that our protests are not in vain, that hope was and is found in the birth of a child in an occupied village, the miraculous daily promise of new life. As we've sung and as we've heard and as we'll celebrate at Christmas, our hope is in that birth of a child in an occupied village, where it was least expected, where people were living in darkness, looking for some sign of hope. And that's not enough, because what we're asked to is to be involved in whatever way that means. And these words from the American civil rights activist Howard Zinn really capture what that means. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, kindness. What we choose to emphasize in this complex history will determine our lives. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places, and there are so many, where people have and do act magnificently, this gives us the energy to act, and at least the possibility of sending this spinning top of a world in a different direction. And if we do act in however small a way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents. And to live now as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory. And I would add to that, it echoes the marvelous victory which we believe in, which calls us to live today as we believe people should live, in the simple, small actions we take, in the love, the kindness, the compassion we show for other people. Something like the winter night shelter, which I gather you got the bazaar for last year, is just the most wonderful way of celebrating dignity. And we passionately believe, we ask people to think globally and act locally, that it's together which we work. One of the things which is most important for us is that not only are we desperately proud of our partners, but we know that they want to be proud of us. They don't want to see us as people who just send them money. They want a relationship which is based on mutuality and each of us being proud of that friendship and that relationship. And that's the most wonderful gift. So thank you so much for supporting us. It's lovely to be here today. Thank you very much.